It is now time for Theoretical Tea and Company with Professor Janice Collins. So please, sit right back and enjoy a sip of knowledge right here on HitMix 88.9 WEIU, here for you.
Good afternoon and welcome to Theoretical Tea and Company. It's so great to have you all with us today for another show that I promise you will be interesting. And on that note, I want to remind you of two important elements here. One is you can participate, and I encourage you to participate in the conversation. This is a program that is meant for the connection between the public and the academy and scholars and research. So please feel free to either call in at 217-581-6116, 581-6116, or post on Facebook on Theoretical Tea on Facebook. If you're not already a friend, become a friend. I'll be more than happy to get your question or comments on the air. Today, we are going to discuss the issue, the debate, the hot topic. I don't really even like to use that word, hot topic. It sounds so sensationalized, but it may be sensationalized, not because of what I've said, but how it's been talked and used and manipulated in the political arena, in the social, even economic arena, things along those lines. I'm talking about the whole idea of the transvaginal ultrasound. Okay. It's really even interesting that I have to pick and pry and find transvaginal ultrasound. Interesting. Okay. So I know you've probably heard a lot of talk about it, read about it, the controversy surrounding it. So I wanted to discuss from a theoretical perspective, a research perspective, this whole idea. We're going to touch on a lot of different elements, okay? And to help me with the discussion, I have two formidable guests here who are experienced and who understand different areas of this topic. And my first guest is Dr. Jeannie Ludlow, who is the director of women's studies here at Eastern Illinois University. And she has also worked at an abortion clinic for 12 years. Dr. Jeannie Ludlow, welcome and good afternoon.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Okay. We also have with us and joining the discussion is Professor Dan Hagen, also of Eastern Illinois University, who has been working here for quite some time, but who also teaches the advanced courses in ethics and has a blog of his own in discussing politics and things along those lines. And I wanted to welcome and say hello to Professor Dan Hagen. Good afternoon.
Thanks, Dr. Collins.
Sure. And we'll just pull the microphone a little closer to you, please. Yeah, pull it all the way over there, okay? Thank you. Okay. So when I'm thinking about, okay, when I was doing the research and said, okay, let's look at this topic. Let's look at the topic. I thought about a couple of things, and then we'll decide. We're going to discuss what it is. Okay, let's just first discuss what it is. What is transvaginal ultrasound, and what is being posed by, I can't even say doctors, politicians, or
yes,
in the debate?
Okay.
Dr. Jeannie Ludlow, tell me
imposed,
about...
Imposed, I would say.
I beg your pardon?
Imposed.
Imposed, yes. Okay, all right.
Okay.
Okay. Dr. Ludlow, you can begin, and Professor Hagen, add in at your will.
There are two ways that ultrasounds are done for pregnant women, whether they're going to have an abortion or go through childbirth, or doctors are trying to save a pregnancy. One way is what we think of as the jelly on the belly ultrasound, where they put cold stuff on your tummy and they run this thing called a transducer across the surface of the mother's stomach, mm-hmm. and it gives an ultrasound picture up on the screen. Mm-hmm. This is a fine way to do an ultrasound. It works most of the time very well. In some cases, however, because of the angle of the uterus, the position of the pregnancy, perhaps a medical condition, or because a pregnancy is very, very early, you can't see well with a jelly on the belly ultrasound.
Okay.
In that case, what a doctor will sometimes choose to do is what we call a transvaginal or vaginal ultrasound. And a transvaginal ultrasound probe is a wand that's probably about 10 inches long and maybe about as big around as my thumb. It's not very big around. And that wand goes into the vagina and up to the surface of the cervix. And then you can get a picture, an ultrasound picture, from a different point of view, mm-hmm. as it were, from a different perspective. Because it doesn't go through tummy mm-hmm. matter, it gives a little more detail.
Okay. And I want to apologize to my audience members. What I meant to do also is to let all of the parents know out there that this is a, we're going to try to keep it as medical as possible, but there may be a word here or there that I'm not sure if you want your little kid to hear. But if not, if so, you may have already educated them on sexual education, and they may have heard the word already. So I just wanted to let you all know about that, though. Okay, thank you. Okay, and so that's a wonderful description of what the procedure is. Mm-hmm. The issue has come into play because states have begun to try and pass legislation that mandates this for individuals who want to have the choice of an abortion.
That's correct.
Okay. So, Professor Dan Hagen, what's so wrong with that, I guess? And I know I'm not asking for your personal opinion. I know you're coming from different perspectives.
Sure.
But what's wrong with that?
Well, it's hard to divorce your personal opinion from it, but I'd say okay, we're talking about a legal procedure. I mean, it's a procedure that is illegal. So I would regard any intrusion by politicians into a relationship between a doctor and his patient and instructing the doctor on what to do for non-medical reasons as a violation of the doctor's professional ethics as well as the woman's rights. Also, I think one of the things that's bothering people about it, see, we have more than one kind of ultrasound we could do here. Why the focus on transvaginal? I think it's symbolism, and it's sort of a symbolic rape because it's people are unwilling to have this procedure done, but it will be done to them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what bothers people.
Mm-hmm. And you can pull your microphone up just a little bit. So yeah. Okay, go ahead.
I have a little trouble with even the metaphoric association with rape.
With rape, mm-hmm. yeah.
And I have that for several different reasons. Number one is, if we argue that transvaginal ultrasound is rape, who's the rapist? And I think it becomes the provider. And I think that's
or the state, the one who orders it.
But the state isn't holding the probe. Uh-huh. The doctor is, or the ultrasound technician.
When he's holding the probe, he's the agent of the state.
And that's what's wrong, right?
So is that really why, then, with this debate here right now, is that why politicians feel so free to be able to say, listen, we need to take some hold of this?
Yes, because they're not holding the probe, exactly. They think they can control this because they're not there with the woman in the room. So that's a level on which it bothers me. The other level on which it bothers me is, it bothers me because of women who are raped. And what does it say to a woman who is surviving a rape experience when I say to her, this medical procedure is just like what you went through? Mm-hmm. Am I not euphemizing her experience? Am I not making light of her experience by saying it's just like this thing that happens in a doctor?
Well, I'd say there's a difference between rape and symbolic rape.
I would too, but I think a lot of the arguments being made right now are not making that distinction, and they're not making it well, even if they are making it.
Well, why is the argument I would rather make the argument over whether the ultrasound should be opposed at all.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That is exactly
the question. It is not the way you do it.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's exactly the question. First of all, almost all abortion providers already use ultrasound. Mm-hmm. In 2010, Oklahoma was one of the first states to make a mandatory ultrasound law.
Now, when they do this ultrasound, what you're talking about there, do they force the woman to watch?
No,
you never watch?
In an abortion clinic, you never force anybody to do anything. I mean, that's sort of counter to the whole idea of choice, right?
But it is offered and it is performed.
And it's performed so the doctor can do the procedure safely.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
You can't see inside a uterus. Mm-hmm. And so you need the ultrasound there to kind of know what's going on most of the time.
Okay.
But almost every abortion provider uses ultrasound. The ones who don't, it's typically because they don't have the equipment and the money to do it. Mm-hmm. And they almost all offer to let the woman see it. Mm-hmm. And I worked in a clinic for 12 years. Most of our patients not only wanted to see their ultrasound pictures, they wanted copies of them. We would often print out the ultrasound picture so they could mm-hmm. take it home. Mm-hmm. Because women know they're pregnant. That's mm-hmm. why they came into the clinic in the first place. They mm-hmm. know there's a baby in there. Mm-hmm. And so it's not a mystery to the women who are in the clinic that there's a baby in there. Mm-hmm. The problem with the Oklahoma law is there were three working, and there still are, I believe, three working clinics in Oklahoma at the time. All three were already doing ultrasounds. Mm-hmm. But the Oklahoma legislature comes along and says, we have to force these abortion clinics to do ultrasounds. Why? Because now all the people in Oklahoma are thinking, those clinics aren't using ultrasounds. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. a way to change the way the public thinks about abortion. That's what these laws are for. They're mm-hmm. to stigmatize. Right. Mm-hmm. They're not to improve patient safety at all.
No, mm-hmm. but when you say that they're mm-hmm. That they asked to see the mm-hmm. ultrasound, so the contention would be, I think the sotto voce contention is that by seeing the ultrasound, that would discourage women from having abortions,
correct.
Right? And you're mm-hmm. saying that often doesn't happen.
It never happens.
Really? That's interesting. Why?
I had one patient ever see her ultrasound and say, wait, I can't do this. And that's mm-hmm. because she found out she had twins instead of one baby. Mm-hmm. She went out into the clinic and she sat for a bit and I talked to her for a while. I left her alone for a while. She cried for a bit and then she came back to us in the office and said, okay, I'm ready now. She just needed time to adjust to that mm-hmm. knowledge uh-huh. that she was aborting twins instead of one mm-hmm. one baby. Mm-hmm. Wow. But that's the only time I ever saw a patient change her mind because of an ultrasound in 12 years. And we're talking every week, between 20 and 40 patients a week. I can't even do that math, but that's mm-hmm. I worked with a lot of
Do you think
patients.
The politicians are aware that the use of ultrasound won't discourage abortion?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so you think they're doing it merely to stigmatize?
Mm-hmm. Yes, uh-huh. to stigmatize and to limit women's, mm-hmm. like you said, limit right. women's choices, right. limit women's rights, mm-hmm. absolutely.
There was I happened to find some research on abortion decision and ambivalence. Mm-hmm. Insights via an abortion decision balance sheet by Susie Allenson in the Clinical Psychologist Journal. And what was found is that when you the patient had the abortion, how they felt at one point in time when they had the abortion with the distress.
Mm-hmm.
The agony of actually having it done, the procedure is very mm-hmm. traumatic, mm-hmm. whether you have an
people.
Ultrasound
mm-hmm.
or not. For some people, right. for this study,
yeah.
the patients were traumatic. Mm-hmm. They had emotional distress.
Okay.
Those were the studies, the respondents.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And so, when she revisited the same individuals, the stress and the anguish had dissipated after 3 months.
Right.
So if that is the case, then so we're really not arguing about, or not us, but the argument is not necessarily about abortion or not. Mm-hmm. And perhaps even though there is, I think, there's warranted in the argument that mm-hmm. is if you see, you know, something inside of you being developed inside and you see that
mm-hmm.
It will have some type of effect on you. Possibly. Not really saying which effect it'll
right,
go either
right.
way, but it's mm-hmm. going to affect whether you say, I'm good, keep going, or
yeah.
I'm not good, or whatever. It's going to have an effect. And,
sure.
and so the political stance is perhaps, like Professor Hagen was saying, if I see that, I may change my mind.
Right.
Okay. And so then we ask the question then, so there, if therefore, is it not about the women's health that they're concerned?
Correct.
Is it then about the child? Or the fetus, or the embryo, or
child
all
is,
the other.
A I'm child good, is good. I'm good child. I'm
well,
good child.
I'm trying to include all the
yeah,
audience members
I
here.
Know,
that
I
they, everyone, what I when I looked at the research, yeah. there were so many different names
yes.
and titles
yes.
and Remember, labels.
And the term they will use is informed consent.
Right.
Could you address that
right.
too, Jean?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
There are all kinds of informed consent laws in the United States. I just gave a conference paper this weekend on informed consent. Informed consent laws assume that if a woman is given a legally mandated kind of information, and a legally mandated amount of time between the time she gets that information and the time she has her abortion. Mm-hmm. She will be making a fully informed decision mm-hmm. based on all the possible information. Mm-hmm. That sounds like a great thing. Mm-hmm. I think informed consent is a great thing. I had informed consent when I had my wisdom teeth out, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I had informed consent when I had my tubes tied. I think it's a good thing. Mm-hmm. The problem mm-hmm. with informed consent and abortion is that sometimes the mandated information is a lie.
Right.
So right now, several states have informed consent laws that force doctors to say, if you have an abortion, you have a higher risk of depression. If you have an abortion, you have a higher risk of breast cancer. Both of those claims have been repeatedly proven wrong through science.
You must be informed of propaganda.
Exactly.
And then give your
consent. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Well, what's interesting about the research, what's missing from the research, though, I think that, this is not my field of study. Mm-hmm. And I have very limited experience, so I'm so glad, that we can all come together and talk about this. What's really interesting, though, is that the study and the research, I'm not sure if, let's say someone, a woman, chooses to have an abortion. Chooses.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Decides, right?
There's a choice. Mm-hmm. Has an abortion at 14. Mm-hmm. Let's say 14, 15.
Right.
And let's say nothing emotional manifests itself until they're 60. And so while the studies are longitudinal, are there any studies that are longitudinal to the point where through a lifetime, because I know some friends and acquaintances who've chosen for mm-hmm. a lot of it was for medical reasons mm-hmm. that the doctor said, if you have any more children, this one will kill you mm-hmm. For other reasons, other medical complications. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure there are other people, some of my friends and acquaintances or, people that I know who've also had that choice and have taken advantage of having a choice, that they talk about it from time to time. Mm-hmm. Even when they say it was a good choice for them, mm-hmm. They still talk a little bit about the despair because it is a difficult decision.
For some women.
For some women.
It's really important to say that, first
That's
of all,
fine.
Janice.
Yeah.
There are as many emotional responses to abortion as there are women who have had abortions.
Sure.
And 54 million women have had abortions in the United States since Roe versus Wade made it legal throughout the U.S. Mm-hmm. So there are 54 million ways to have an abortion, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. And I think it's important we keep that
in
mind.
Sure.
Just keep
saying it throughout the hour. That's fine.
But I think the thing that's important to think about with that is there are two things I'm thinking about. First mm-hmm. of all, we don't have longitudinal studies, and the reason we don't is because we made abortion legal on the basis of privacy. Mm-hmm. Some of us think this mm-hmm. was a mistake, mm-hmm. but it's mm-hmm. what we've got right now.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So because it's based on privacy, we don't know who
sure.
those 54 million women are,
right.
unless
right.
they choose mm-hmm. to say so.
Sure.
The other thing I'm thinking of is mm-hmm. sometimes something is sad mm-hmm. and right. Mm-hmm.
That was what I was going to mm-hmm. add.
Yeah.
The fact that people have emotional reactions, I'm not sure is relevant, depending on,
right.
sometimes you have to go through sad things in life. It doesn't mm-hmm. mean that the decision was wrong.
Sure, mm-hmm. absolutely. Yeah. Having a rough marriage and deciding to mm-hmm. give up on that marriage and mm-hmm. go through divorce.
You may mm-hmm. mourn that.
Absolutely, you may mourn it. And mm-hmm. it may still be the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that because of that, I think it drives the point that it's not easy for a woman or a man to choose to have this procedure done.
No.
It's not easy. And because of that.
Unless it is. I mean, in some cases it may be,
I found my abortion mm-hmm. decision very easy to make.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so because of that, for some, it's easy or not easy. But the fact is that because I think that someone thinks about it.
Right.
And they look at and weigh where they are in their lives or mm-hmm. whatever the case may be. And what's really missing is not between the woman or the father of the child.
Right. That's
we're going to talk about mm-hmm. the men's rights
yes.
as well.
Yeah.
Because sometimes men don't have any rights because they don't even know that the woman is pregnant
exactly.
or whatever
yeah.
the case may be. So that's part
exactly.
of that. But what's really missing from the dialogue that I want to throw in here that may go a little left, it's not about between the politicians and the woman, women's rights, women's groups and women, men's groups and women. Let's get all of that out of where. What about the debate about the decision between a woman and her higher God, her higher spirit, in that no one can play God except God if you believe in God, mm-hmm. and say, you know what, this is a decision between me and God, mm-hmm. and I'm going to have to deal with the consequences.
Yes.
Whether I go to hell, heaven, whether I die on the table, don't die on the table, whether I made a great decision, my life is wonderful. It's a private decision between me and God, because I have to continue with this for the rest of my life.
Even without God, I would say, you know, Jean-Paul Sartre and existentialism would say you're damned to freedom. You have to make the decision, and you have to live with the decision, mm-hmm. no matter what.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Many of the women that we worked with in the clinics, women do talk about their spirituality, okay. and their abortions. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. and this is something I write about in my research, okay. is there are women who will say at the clinic, and this broke my heart the first time it happened to me when I was counseling a patient, I honestly believe that if I have this abortion, I'm going to hell, but I cannot have this baby. I cannot afford another child. Mm-hmm. And it broke my heart, and I had to spend a lot of time thinking about what that meant for her and what it meant for me. But I think what it really says a lot about is who we are as a society. Mm-hmm. Why in the world as a society would we put women in a position where they feel like their choice is between going to hell and starving their children?
I also know
that's our sin.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it is. Oh. And I also know of women who don't quote unquote believe in abortion and who've had abortions.
Many, mm-hmm. and right. some clinics mm-hmm. actually make women who say they're anti-abortion sign a form mm-hmm. that they won't sue the clinic. We didn't do that. We didn't believe in that.
If
Every
we did know,
right.
I think we would be surprised. Who has and who hasn't had
abortions.
Oh,
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. One in three
sure.
women,
yeah.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
One in three women.
Mm-hmm. And according to the Guttmacher Institute, which studies reproductive health issues, Texas is the only state that effectively enforces a transvaginal ultrasound before abortions.
Yes.
Arizona, Kansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida require an ultrasound, but leave it to the physician to determine the type.
And then Virginia is the one who's just trying to
right.
pass the law.
With yes. the new law, which keeps going wavering now, right?
Well, the governor has said he will not sign one with a transvaginal ultrasound.
Making it mandated.
What
right.
the problem with the argument about transvaginal, making it all about the transvaginal ultrasound, is now if they put through one that says it has to be an ultrasound,
right.
there's no reason for him to say no, because right. he's mm-hmm. taken out the controversial part, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It needs to be controversial that
which is probably what they will do.
It's exactly what they'll do, yeah.
yeah. Yeah. Well, it's interesting, and when I saw how that was changing, when we talk about Rick Santorum, for instance, and how things are changing, and you know, we're going to touch on this a little bit in general, in theory, and sticking with the facts, because we don't have a politician here, but a politician may call in at any time at 217-581-6116, 581-6116, to make sure everybody's on the same playing field here. But some of the quotes that that come from the candidate, the delegate, I would advocate that any doctor that performs an abortion should be criminally charged for doing so.
Yes.
So we're dealing with the criminal aspect as well. Okay.
Of course, he's also made statements saying that contraception is wrong and should be outlawed, and mm-hmm. we shouldn't have sex education at all. Mm-hmm. And so I have this quote from this Maureen Dowd column today from a GOP strategist, Alex Castellanos, who said, mm-hmm. Republicans being against sex is not good. Sex is popular. You know, so if you have a overwhelming issue saying anything sexual, we're against it, you have a political problem as well as an ethical problem.
Okay. And of course, we remember what he said some time ago, the most dangerous place for an African-American in this country is in the womb.
Yes. That's a whole other problem.
That's another. Mm-hmm. Well, and the reason why I bring this up mm-hmm. is that it appears that, you know, when I started, okay, what is this issue really about? Is it protecting the woman's life? Is it protecting the unborn child? Is it a political issue? Is it a religious issue? Is it intimidation by psychological intimidation, visual intimidation? And then I think to myself, where I couldn't come up with one label, which was fine, I thought to myself, is this really the argument?
The issue being transvaginal ultrasounds?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is a woman's right
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
choose,
mm-hmm.
And when it comes
and
to
whether
her body,
abortion is morally wrong or not,
right.
you know, yeah. morally right or morally wrong.
And is this a debate that is a moot point that changes every decade. You know, when you have...
Except I think it always goes back to the moral issue. That's what drives it.
Yeah, that's what drives it.
That's why...
Which is a problem.
It
because
is. Neither side will give up.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So therefore, you know, but the debates continue.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't hear on the political floor, mm-hmm. as Pelosi will say, mm-hmm. women...
No.
Talking... How is that... I know how it's possible, but let me just ask that rhetorical question in that many laws that are passed of marginalized groups, I'm going to put that in quotes because I'm dealing with the issue of marginalization, are passed by individuals who are not in the margins.
Let me just interject my New Yorker cartoon here that I love. It's a panel of men, and the caption is, our topic of discussion today is, why are there no women on this panel?
Yeah. And
that's America today.
It is. You know, I think the bigger question and the question of what happens when you have an ethical mm-hmm. or moral argument and how neither side will mm-hmm. will give up. What I work with in my research is what happens is it's the voices of women that get lost in that.
Uh-huh.
It's mm-hmm. the voices of the 54 million women who have had abortions.
And their actual experience.
And their actual experiences that we lose when we stand against each other and yell, mm-hmm. I'm pro-choice. Well,
right.
I'm pro-life. We completely erase those women.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to quote a man, but he was a great man, mm-hmm. Dr. George Tiller, who is the abortion doctor who was murdered in the vestibule of his church in 2009.
Tiller the baby killer, according to Bill O'Reilly.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. This is his definition of abortion. Abortion is not a cerebral or a reproductive issue. Abortion is a matter of the heart. For until one understands the heart of a woman, nothing else about abortion makes any sense at all. That's the problem with pro-choice and pro-life. It leaves out completely the heart of the woman. Mm-hmm. And what I learned working in a clinic, I went into that clinic, a pro-choice feminist activist. I was going to show these women the way to freedom through understanding how their lives were oppressed by patriarchy. And it was all BS, because what I learned from them was that abortion was about their hearts. Mm-hmm. Women would come in and sit down and say to me, I love this baby. I mm-hmm. cannot have it.
Mm-hmm. So, if I say what, then why not just take the whole issue of a woman and her body and off the floor?
Because then they'd have to pay attention to unemployment. Then they'd have to pay attention to people losing their homes, to the mortgage crisis.
Good point.
Don't you think it's a little odd? We had, in 2011, we had the record number of abortion laws proposed and passed in all the states. Mm-hmm. And it's when we're going through this economic crisis. Really, this is what they have to pay attention to?
Mm-hmm.
Where are the laws about job creation? Where are the laws about giving people relief from interest rates?
It's always useful it's always useful to remember, we're not talking about eliminating abortions, because no matter what you do, you can ban them,
exactly.
you can execute everybody,
exactly.
that will not eliminate abortions.
It will not. Mm-hmm. No, we've been doing abortions since 1550 BCE, yeah. that we have written record of, probably longer than that.
Mm-hmm. And so it is trendy? Would that be fair? And the fact of the political
campaign?
It's a
smokescreen.
Yes.
Okay.
I think right now. And not that people don't sincerely believe in it. They do. But their
exactly.
sincere belief in it is being used to obscure other issues.
And most people who sincerely believe in it mm-hmm. are ambivalent about whether or not it's an issue of the law.
Mm-hmm.
Right? People
right.
who – mm-hmm. I know people who – identify themselves as pro-life, who are very strongly anti-abortion, who will still say to you, but I don't think we should pass a law against it. Mm-hmm. I just wish women wouldn't do it.
I have to think that I do too, because they're people who've had abortions.
Right?
So they can hardly say that they have to ban it forever. They themselves should be locked up.
Or, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Let me take another stab at something else. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Theoretical Tea and Company with Dr. Collins, Dr. Jeannie Ludlow, and Professor Dan Hagen. We're talking about the whole issue of women's rights, their body, and transvaginal ultrasound, abortion, things along those lines. Thanks for tuning in. But let me ask you this. I wanted to bring in another element. When I think about from the core out, and I think about when I heard the debates coming up, what it was also missing, other than the woman here who's arguing against another woman, as we see
mm-hmm.
all the time,
mm-hmm.
which supposedly carries a lot of weight,
mm-hmm.
woman and woman, so therefore it can't be sexist or whatever the mm-hmm. case may be. We know how the rhetoric is played. What I also don't hear are laws that are designed and directed toward the male aspect of it. Mm-hmm. For instance, if you're going to take away the right of a woman to have a choice about her body, then should we also have a law? And this is going to be a little out there, but I'm going to just put it out there. Should we also have a law that dictates a man in his body? Because a woman cannot do it by herself. So then should we have a law that says, men, you're not allowed to have sex with women before the age of 18? Because after 18, we think that maybe you'll get a job and you'll be able to afford it. Because if you get a woman pregnant and you take away the choice, and I'm not saying what way, what side I'm on at all. Let's just say you take away that choice. Then therefore you have no choice as well. And at 18, you and your family will not only take care of the child that is mandated to be born, but you also will take care of the woman who has to pay for daycare, may not be able to go to college, may not be able to get a good job because of the fact that she cannot find a babysitter, exposing their child to a lot of different things. So what about the scenario when I said, okay, you know what, fine, women's rights, okay, men's rights, let's look at that too, since it takes two. All right, men, no sex before 18. After that, if you have a child out of wedlock, you are going to be responsible for that child until that child is 18 years old. You and your family will be responsible for that child and the welfare of the mother who is left alone sometimes to care for this child. You will make sure that she gets funding for her schooling. You will make sure that she gets funding for college, and she gets funding for all of the other aspects that aren't covered, baby food, diapers, what a gas in the car, whatever the case may be, until the child is 18. So therefore, the woman does not have to suffer the consequences of being by herself raising that child, because a lot of men, the women are left with the responsibility and the child, and they're saying, you know, and they go on, I shouldn't say that. Let me take that back. Not a lot of men. I will say there are some instances where men continue to have children, babies, different mothers, and never are required. And what I mean that by that is mandated and executed and officially, legally bound to taking care of all those children till they're 18, as well as the mother. Because a mother, I've seen the research and in personal experience, where a mother's health can deteriorate because of all the stress it takes to take care of these children. Mm-hmm. Mm. Okay, so let's say take abortion away. Okay, we're going to have all these kids. Now what?
Well, I see the logic of your position. I have to say, you know, now we'll have a lot of women in prison for abortions and a lot of men in prison for having sex before 18.
That's
so great.
You're right. That's exactly right.
But I mean, we're talking about body politics here.
Well, I think there are several
okay.
several things. First of all, first thing I started thinking about was Katha Pollitt, who is a feminist pundit, years ago published an essay, many years ago, I taught it in class in maybe late 1990s, published an essay suggesting that for heterosexual men in America, there should be a sperm tax, and you wouldn't have to pay the tax if you could either document that you were gay or document that you'd had a vasectomy.
Right.
Otherwise, every straight man, sexually active or not, because you could become sexually active later, every straight man pays a sperm tax. The sperm tax goes into a fund to support children who are born out.
Well that's thinking outside the box, mm-hmm. isn't it?
It wasn't received very popular.
I bet. Yeah. But nevertheless, so, I do see the logic of that position too.
And the reason she suggested it that way instead of individuals is the old mama's baby, papa's maybe, right?
Right.
It's very clear whose body the baby comes out of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's not always so easy to prove.
One thing that approach
can't that be law?
One thing that approach does do is say, well, we know it was a man's.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
we don't have to worry, Papa. Maybe we know it was a man, so you men will pay.
That's right.
Yeah.
But the other thing I'd like to point out is not all effects of single parenthood, and I think single parenthood is hard
it's
for
all negative,
any parent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not all of them are negative, but even mm-hmm. the negative ones are not all economic.
Sure, mm-hmm. yeah, sure.
I was a single mom for 5 years. There's something very difficult sometimes about being the only grown-up in the house.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's an emotional thing, and handing me money is not going to change
it'll
that.
It'll help, though.
Yeah, it would help.
Money would have
it would help a
lot
of people.
but it's not all of it.
No.
And so it's not enough to say you have to pay. It's also it's going to have to be mandated. You have to be involved.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I can't tell you how many women I talked to at the clinic who said, I've seen the way he's not involved in his other children's lives, so I'm not having a children with
this child. This also doesn't address women who would just say, I do not want a
child. I do not want a child.
Or I don't want that man involved in
or
the
Or
life.
I don't want any child
It's
at
something
all.
That happened
right.
one night
have
and
a
that
baby.
Sort of thing.
Right.
But again, this is the first time that I can remember in my life that this type of discussion has taken place in talking about men.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about why not pass a law? Because I'm thinking to myself, I think things would change.
You know, but the thing about men in the clinic now, and so we saw very particular kinds of men in the clinic, right?
Tell me about that.
In our clinic, we not only invited people to bring a support person with them to all their appointments, but we also invited men if they wanted to. The support person could go into the procedure room with a woman if she wanted the support person there and if the support person felt like they could do it. Now, aside from the fact that I saw several men faint, which is a whole other question, what we found, and we were speaking to particular kinds of men who would show up, right, for this kind of thing. What we saw was a lot of men who really did have mixed feelings about the abortion, who on one hand understood, just like women do, that raising a baby is hard, and bringing a child into our family right now or into our individual families right now could be very difficult. And they understood that, and some of them were sad. Some of them were sad. We do know nationally, the studies being done by places like Guttmacher and Answer and other places that Physicians for Reproductive Health and Choice that study abortion know that if a woman includes her male partner in her decision about an unplanned pregnancy, she's actually more likely, not less likely, to have an abortion.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah. If she includes her mother in her decision, she's four times more likely. Because what abortion is really about is motherhood. And a mom knows, the mom of that 14-year-old you talked about earlier, or the mom of a 17-year-old, knows what it takes to be a mom. And they have a suspicion about whether their teenager's ready for that or not. So involving men in the decision does not make abortion less likely. It actually makes it more likely.
Now, let me, and before we leave this topic, when we talk about, you know, the burden, it's, you said it was really hard to prove who's the father of the child and things like that. And it's really difficult to pass some of these ideas that I've proposed.
But it's a good vision.
Because of that. And because I think that men have rights and they should be a part of, just like you said, in your clinic, you included them. I think that's really important. So the responsibility, I think it should be equal. I still don't know why women aren't paid the same, but that's another discussion. But because of that, let's say it's very difficult. To me, then, it points to the aspect and conclusively about the argument that because the woman, it really is about the problem solution lying within the women.
Yes, it is.
That the burden within the women, that the women should actually choose.
Yeah, absolutely.
If that's it's really difficult to do. Well, Dr. Collins, you can't do that because this is hard to prove and that's hard to do it, and men can't do this and males can't do that, and you can't force them to do this. You can't. Okay, well then, why are you part of the debate?
You know,
I don't know. This is
The power.
Yeah, it is exactly. It's about power. The doctor I worked with the most is a man, and. When a man was unhappy about, and we did have men in the clinic who were unhappy about the women, their partners' abortion decisions, or angry about it, and I think it's important to say that they came anyway to support them, and I think that's laudable and important. And he would sometimes talk to these men who were unhappy, and he would say to them, look, if you're a man and you want to have a baby, you have to do two things. Number one, you have to find a woman who's willing to have a baby with you. And number two, you have to be the kind of man she wants to have a baby with.
Sure, absolutely.
Wow.
And then he would talk to them about, you know, if you have a faith system that says there's a creator, if you believe in a God, then that's your God's decision. It's not the woman's decision, but that's the way it is.
So then we're talking about also the aspect of casual sex. Whether that should, you know, okay, here we go. So we're talking about sex without protection. You know, that can chlamydia, AIDS, pregnancy.
Normalcy. It's so normal.
Let us remember, the same people who want to ban abortion want to ban contraception right
now.
We're heading for a big train wreck here.
Yes, we are.
Okay.
But I have to say, you know, it's normal to sometimes miss using contraception. Mm-hmm. It's not bad people who right. have sex without contraception. It's human
it's people.
People.
Yeah.
It's humanity. It's humanity. I would like to think that we are all 100% perfect and do it right every time, but we don't do anything right every time. We're
sure.
human. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sex is a lot of fun, and it gets, there's this whole build-up thing, and then there you are. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you just yeah. aren't being responsible right then.
Yeah, sure. I understand that some people actually, after drinking, have sex, which kind of...
I'm sure that... Oh,
of course.
I
alcohol, drugs.
I heard one of the best stories I ever heard on NPR was about an abortion clinic, and it was one of those driveway moments, and they had protesters outside the clinic, and they had one of the male workers in the abortion clinic who was outside and who was yelling at the protesters. He said, yeah. How many of these children have you adopted?
That's
said, then
right.
shut up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he just laid into them. And so there's another thing. If we're going to ban abortions, we have to have an effective system of adoption. Because we're talking about the women who have the children won't necessarily keep them. They may
right.
not want
yeah.
them.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, that was the other aspect of adoption. That,
mm-hmm.
But I would think that it would be very difficult for some to go through the whole 9 months
mm-hmm.
and then say, okay, here you go.
Yeah.
I think it takes a special person to do that.
You know, yeah. and because, you know, now we have shows about that, right? Mm-hmm. We have shows where, have you ever wondered where your parents are from? As a matter of fact, I talked with this woman, an older woman, I would say 60-some or so, and she told me of her emotional distress that she's had through her life, and she really feels that it was because she was adopted.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, you have another side of it that, even if you are adopted, that's not always, even though she was raised by a loving family and that sort of thing.
Questions of identity are very profound.
Oh, absolutely. Identity is so important. So then, you know, that's another issue when you talk about adoption and should you know who the father is and the mother is and that sort of thing. That's another.
And it's the same issue in a way. When you talk about when we say the mother, motherhood, we mean we have a whole set of identity-based expectations that comes with that. And many of them are very judgmental about what that means.
But, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's interesting that about 12, 15 years ago, we started finding it much easier to talk about both mothers in an adoption situation.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
We find it very easy now to talk about the adoptive mother and the biological mother.
Right.
And both have a motherhood identity.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't we talk about the abortive mother? I think that would be a huge shift
mm-hmm.
in our thinking about abortion.
Yeah.
To just be able to say, this is another way that mothers make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
61% of women who have abortions already have a child. They are mothers.
Right.
Well, what about, what if, let's talk about adoption for a moment.
Sure.
What if the male and the female decided, we don't want to have an abortion
mm-hmm.
For religious reasons,
mm-hmm.
for medical reasons, for whatever. For whatever reason they have. They just decide, they don't want to. But the woman says, well, I don't want to have the child.
Right.
I can't do it right now.
Mm-hmm.
What
By
about
have,
this?
Do you mean raise or do you mean birth?
That's what I was going to say.
Okay.
Raising.
Yeah, okay.
What about the bringing into the debate the issue of the woman having the child and actually allowing the father to adopt the child?
He shouldn't have to adopt his
child. I mean, not adopt the child.
Raise the child.
Yeah. And so therefore, she doesn't have to give the child over to adoption
mm-hmm.
and have identity problems.
Mm-hmm.
That because a lot of times, I'm making hasty generalizations.
Right.
I hope you all know that, and excuse me for that, okay? When I say a lot of times and whatever. That part of the debate is not heard as far as, okay, males, come on in and take. And I think part of it is the research shows that a lot of males don't want to necessarily raise a child at that time because it's inconvenient for them. It really gets into the way of especially them being the breadwinner and having jobs and education and that sort of thing. That goes back, I mean, decades and decades mm-hmm. When you have these gender roles, if you will, about mm-hmm. who should raise the child and things along those lines. But again, would it change the dynamics of the conversation if we included men more in the conversation? And should they be included more in the conversation about abortions and rights and things along those lines?
I thought I'd let the man answer that first.
Yeah, I thought I'd let Jeannie answer that. you know, that's a good question. I,
Something to think about.
I have a feeling that people have, I mean, they make those arrangements, right?
They do. They do. It's true. Yeah. I think that kind of thing does happen.
Uh-huh.
I think we're very judgmental about it. Mm-hmm. I think we are more judgmental about a woman who will move out of the home where her children are mm-hmm. and go off by herself than we are about a man who moves out of the home where his children are.
Right. Or mm-hmm. let's Susan Smith. A monster,
yes,
a demoness from a hell.
Absolutely.
But men shoot their families, their wives, and their children all the time. We don't regard, they're terrible, but we don't make them demonic in the way that people like that are regarded
because
as demonic.
Because there's something about motherhood that's supposed to make Medea. It impossible, that's right, impossible for you to separate from your children.
That's right, yeah.
And
when it happens, it frightens everybody
yes.
on some
yes.
elemental level.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I think the system you've proposed, Janice, is an interesting one. And I think that the reason it doesn't happen more is because, and I think this is true no matter who is the parent who raises the child and who is the parent who leaves the family or doesn't raise the child, I think there's fear that somewhere down the line, this is going to come back to me. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be a mother. Dan is the father mm-hmm. of the child, so he's going to raise the child. Mm-hmm. I'm leaving. I'm going off to do whatever it is I'm going to do with my life.
Right.
And then something happens to Dan, and
right.
suddenly I have these two children that I have to integrate it back into my life.
That you had gotten rid of.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whereas if I had gone through a legal adoption, if we had both signed adoption papers and someone else had adopted our children, then my responsibility for them has been taken
care
of.
Or an abortion.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, so that's interesting. I was thinking about this program. I don't know if you've even seen it on television. They have, I think it's called Teen and Pregnant.
Oh, hmm.
No.
It's all about, you know, showing the challenges that a young teenage girl and boy are going through trying to. They chose not to have the abortion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
So they're not only just teenagers and pregnant, they've chosen to have a mm-hmm. child, and how difficult it is to, especially if you don't have the family support, to help wake the child up. But a lot of times the kids aren't living together.
Right.
Yeah. The father lives far away, so it's hard for him to get there every day to help change the diapers.
Well, the grandparents at age 32. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And of course, that brings in the whole aspect of children raising children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
At a very young age, and you know, and the fact that intimacy does happen, it's very natural, and their studies have shown us that without even touch, it could be, it can have a negative effect on an individual without having human touch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not saying to the point of having, you know, sex, but human touch, intimacy is very, very important.
Right. Those studies they did with about the necessity of touch the necessity was profound.
It was.
That's
right.
You could give a chimpanzee everything but touch, and they would just wither and die.
Right.
Yeah. And what about the whole aspect then? Let's go to the other extreme then. The woman she and her husband. Let's go to the husband aspect, because mm-hmm. abortion doesn't always happen outside of marriage, of course, we know.
Although 86% of abortion patients in the United States are unmarried.
Okay.
So it's often unmarried. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Often unmarried,
that's
often
the highest,
low income,
that's the
often
highest,
a racial minority.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yes,
exactly.
Those studies, yes.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the ones that do it, they get married.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they don't believe in contraception. For whatever reason, it may
or
not be religion.
Or they can't use it. For
or
whatever
they can't
reason.
Use it, or whatever.
Allergies.
And they move on to having 20 children.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm.
And then what if?
Then they move from Teen and Pregnant to the Hoarders show.
No, the Hoarders show. No, let's say just
somebody and somebody plus eight.
Well, let's just say, you know, and you know, if you look at the records, you know. There used to be a time without, you know, lambskin or whatever the case mm-hmm. may be. You know, your great grandmother probably had 22 children and 16 children and 12 children and that
my
sort of
thing.
My father
was one of a dozen siblings.
Okay.
Yeah.
And let's say
it was not the Waltons, I'll tell you that.
Well, okay. And let's just say that that it starts to take a toll on the woman's body.
On the woman's body, on the family's ability to live. and work, because we are not an agrarian society anymore.
I was just about to make the agrarian thing. We have to say that, because when those families routinely occurred, those people were, among other things, free farm labor.
That's right.
Let's not be over-sentimentalize it.
And they were feeding each other.
That's right. They were feeding each other. Mm-hmm. That's an economic system on the farm in which it works. Mm-hmm. In other economic areas, it does not work.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. That's correct. Mm-hmm. But it also is hard on our environment. Mm-hmm. I hate to bring that up. I know it's a very sticky argument to make, but let's face it, how many billion people are in the world right now?
Wow.
And really, do we want to go to a time when people were having even six children in a family mm-hmm. and increase our numbers that quickly? I don't mm-hmm. think so. Mm-hmm. We've messed mm-hmm. things up too much for mm-hmm. that.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it brings to mind the legal assignments of abortion or what have you in China, and how they try to control the population in a certain
exactly.
way, much
exactly.
less the sex. That is still debatable mm-hmm. About that. But again, to me, I question it still. If this argument, if this debate that is needed, mm-hmm. I will say that is needed, is more of... It's used at times, like you said, it's a timely thing, because when you get the end of the day, without the political race, without the economic issues that we're facing, at the end of the day, things happen. The only way it's not going to happen is if you don't have sex,
right? Mm. Or at least if you don't have straight sex.
Mm. Or if you don't have straight sex. Thank you.
There's a story in the Guardian today about asexuals too, so we can mm-hmm. go there.
Exactly. Yeah.
They don't have the problem.
Right.
Unless they are raped.
Oh, that's a good point. Oh, gee. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, that's another whole aspect.
Right.
If you go through that and then you're forced to.
Right.
Now, that, just to be real fair, though.
Okay.
That's a very tiny percentage of mm-hmm. abortions mm-hmm. are because of rape. Very mm-hmm. tiny. Less than 2%. Mm-hmm. Most abortions in the United States are elective.
Right.
Chosen.
But we have to consider that when we think about passing laws that are going to include even that
2%.
Yeah. So again, this has been a wonderful and lively discussion without necessarily a solution. Is that...
I kind of didn't expect one going into it.
Yeah, well, not that we expected one, but all that to say is my point. When it's discussed... in the media, when it's discussed on political platforms, there is no answer, a complete answer.
Right.
So why are we, and it's somewhat of a rhetorical question, but not, why are we then discussing it? That's what we have to look at.
Mm-hmm.
That's what women and men who are listening to these debates, watching these debates, you have to go further and deeper under the layers and say, what is this really all about?
People have intractable positions, but neither of them will make the problem go away or the situation go away. So we keep churning it. We keep going on and on.
I think our solution is to think about people's experiences.
Right, I agree.
Let the people, I wish the people who have had abortions, the 54 million people, and the people who love them, felt like they could speak up in our society.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to do what we can to reduce the stigmatization of abortion so people can speak up.
Okay.
Because that's the only way I think things are going to change, is if we hear those voices.
Okay. Well, let me ask you about this, and this is going to be a sensitive issue. When we can talk about this, and the way we've been talking about it today, some individuals listening to the politics will say, the reason why we're able to discuss it on this level is that we are dehumanizing the whole aspect of whether it's a baby or not.
Mm-hmm. But you see, so, that's not true.
No, I'm saying that. Well, okay, and I want you to respond to that.
Yeah.
And the fact that one of the areas that really is about abortion or not abortion is that whether I'm killing a child.
Right.
Whether I'm killing my child.
Right.
And if I see the child on an ultrasound and I see the legs and the arms, you know, because they have those, what at one time you would never see a picture on a billboard as you're driving down an interstate of whatever you know, embryo, fetus, unborn child, whatever the case may be. But some will argue that, yes, that is someone. That is someone real.
It is someone.
That is developing.
It
so
is.
I don't want to
On
be...
On the other hand, if you throw away an acorn, I would say you haven't destroyed an oak.
Well, I don't think you can compare, though, an acorn. I understand what you're saying.
I'm saying a potential
being.
But
the individuals who are saying, listen,
the question is
this
potential
is
or extant. know, and it's just, we get into deep waters here.
But I'm going to take you back now to your symbolic rape is different mm-hmm. from actual rape
right.
for just a minute. Because in the United States, this is not true of every culture, but in the United States, we equate pregnancy with baby. Mm-hmm. We absolutely do. If your best friend calls you and says, oh, Dan, I just found out I'm pregnant,
right.
your head does not say, oh my gosh, she's growing an embryo.
Right.
She's having a fetus. That's not where your head goes. It right. says, oh, Janice is having a baby.
Yes.
Sorry, mm-hmm. Janice, to use you as an example.
No, that's fine. No, yes. Yeah, but explain it just like that. Keep going because I'm understanding. Go ahead.
Yeah.
That's. We in the United States think that pregnancy and baby are the same thing.
Right.
Okay.
Women who come into the clinic talk about babies. That was the lesson I had to learn from them.
Okay.
I was saying tissue. I was saying fetus. I was saying embryo. And they were looking at me like I was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Tissue what? I'm having a baby. I'm actually not having a baby because I have to have an abortion. So people.
So are you saying, is it a baby or is it?
Sure. Okay. Say it's a baby. That
okay.
doesn't change anything is what I'm saying. The
okay.
question of whether it's a baby or not does not change people's positions on abortion.
Mm.
Some people who
don't like abortion will not like it, even if someone could somehow prove to them that that's just a fetus and not a baby.
Okay.
And people who are in favor of abortion rights are not going to change their minds just because someone can prove to them that that's a baby and not a fetus. I'm
okay.
saying it's another question that does not change the terms of the debate that Dan's mm-hmm. been talking about
yeah.
and the fact that we have these two sort of intractable positions mm-hmm. going
and
in
a way, and it's metaphysical, philosophical, and semantic.
It is.
Semantic.
Absolutely. Yeah. It is. Absolutely.
And so, then would you say this whole, because you're right, I mean, you hear pregnancy, it's like, oh my God, you can have a baby.
Exactly.
And you start buying clothes and da 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 da.
And then if you lose the pregnancy,
mm-hmm.
you've lost a baby.
Yes.
Right.
And there's a mourning and the grieving.
And there's mourning and grieving.
And that you go through that.
Absolutely.
Whereas if we regarded pregnancy as parasitism,
exactly.
it would be a very different view.
Exactly.
But we're not. We don't.
We don't.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
But that would be, you know, and again, that's semantic.
It is.
It's
it
interesting
is.
That you bring that up because I was looking at this whole aspect of dermoid cysts.
Yeah.
And how it's called the invisible twin. Or
yes,
like,
yes. My nephew had one of those.
And it was a twin. And I think, you know, that could hold emotion as well. It's really a very sensitive emotional private
does.
Conversation that has become political and public.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And I think as Jeannie sort of said earlier, it's a lot of it is not about pregnancy or anything else. A lot of it is about other things going on in society entirely that have nothing to do with any of this.
Right.
They really don't have anything to do with sex or the rest of it.
Right.
It's about power issues.
It is about power.
Yeah.
It's about
and
power
so,
and it's about life and death. Who
right.
gets to have decisions over life and death?
At both ends of the
And
spot.
So I would
yes.
think then, I would think that on one aspect, I would think on one aspect that the feminists there would be a feminist group or something along those lines who would get up and say, you know what, this is not about politics.
Boy, I
this
wish
is
someone
not
would.
About. And say, you know what, we want it off the floor.
Yeah.
But then there are other feminist groups that say, you know what, it is totally about that. We want it on the floor because we need laws to protect women who don't know any better for themselves, which again points to the issue. If it is a woman's issue and feminism about women and not
yes.
saying men can't be, because
yeah.
we know Dr. Gillespie, who was here on
yes.
the show.
I think people thought Roe versus Wade might take it off the floor.
I think
did
they
not.
Did too.
Yeah.
yeah. yeah.
So
I
this, and some would say
yeah.
that this is a strategy to actually challenge that and to bring it back too.
It is. It does. It
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
yeah.
Absolutely.
And so it appears that perhaps it's not about one part of the solution may be for people on both sides to continue to speak up and have the debate
mm-hmm.
and to be educated
mm-hmm.
about certain aspects and what does it really mean. But also, again, even when you're educated, it's about interpretation.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you can say whatever you want. You can have the studies. You can show me whatever. I'm still going to see and think whatever I want to think.
Good poster yesterday was somebody sent out around was this proves that once again that women's place is in the House. And the Senate.
That's correct. You know, I have a good friend named Kate Cockrell, who is an abortion researcher at UC San Francisco. And this is what she says about it. She says that what we should think about, if we're going to think about abortion and abortion rights, is this. If someone you care about, your sister, your cousin, your daughter, your mom, your best friend, your neighbor, comes to you and says, Janice, I'm pregnant, and I just can't have this baby right now, and I've decided to have an abortion. I'm a little bit scared. Would you come to the clinic with me? Then the question that is important is, could you put aside your feelings you have about abortion, whatever they are, and your feelings about when life begins, whatever they are, and your feelings about motherhood, whatever they are, and offer your heart and your time in support of this woman you care about, because that's where change will happen, is when we interact with someone we like, someone
I know of cases in which that exact thing
occurs. Me too.
Occurs.
Many of them.
That's right. Me too.
And that's where change happens. That's
I think answer. That is a wonderful note to end this program in. But Professor Hagen, did
Thank you
have anything else?
No, let's leave it there.
Yeah. Good. I think that is a very, very good note to leave it on. And the discussion that continues and will continue outside of Theoretical Tea and Company. But I do want to take out the moment to thank my guests here who were able to bring a bit of air, fresh air, to the issue of something that is just being beat over and over and over and over and over again, that took out time today to talk with
Next
us.
Next time I want a heavier topic.
I know, I really kind of want to. I want to thank Dr. Jeannie Ludlow, who has experience of 12 years in abortion clinics, as well as the Director of Women's Studies here at Eastern Illinois University, and who is a person on either side of the coin. You never really know, but you always can count on her to have a voice, to have something to say about issues and social injustices and speaking for the voiceless. So
thank
I thank her for being here.
Thank you very much.
And Professor Dan Hagen,
thank you.
Who I love to debate on and off the show about many, many different things, because he has a take on a lot of elements and a lot of ideas that I never would have thought of in a million years. And I expect he's in
Dr.
his
Collins is a passionate person.
She is. That's why we like her.
And thank you so much for the audience and actually joining in the show. You can always hit me up on Facebook for any comments, and you know how to find emails and research and books that are being done by both the individuals online. And as always, I want to dedicate the show to someone. Or something, or I dedicate the show to the unborn, to the born, to the developing, to the tissue, to the fetus, to the image that you have in your mind. And if you find yourself in a decision, to the mothers and fathers who have to make a difficult decision one way or another, I dedicate the show to you and ask that you get educated and make the best choice for you and your life and people who are surrounding you and significant others. And on that note, I'd also like to say, while all that is going on, please take a stand in stopping the bullying that's going on in this country, on the political platform as well as on the platforms in your personal lives. Take a stand, stop it, protect it, speak up. Even the ones that are being bullied have the courage to come talk to someone over and over again. Thank you so much. I hope everyone has a great day. Thanks for joining Theoretical Tea and Company.
Thank you for tuning in to Theoretical Tea and Company. Please join us next time for another sip of knowledge, right here on HitMix 88.9 WEIU, here for you.